The silence in the elevator shouldn't have been this heavy, but the air felt thick, like it was vibrating with the frequency of a scream nobody was allowed to let out. My reflection in the brushed steel doors looked like a stranger, a woman in a charcoal power suit who had finally arrived at the 32nd floor, only to find the carpet soaked in invisible blood. 2 days ago, the screams from the C-suite were loud enough to rattle the glass partitions, a jagged, ugly sound of a woman losing her career in real time, followed by the frantic scurrying of legal aides. Today, that office is mine. The mahogany desk is polished to a mirror finish, the previous occupant's nameplate already recycled into a memory, and my name sits there in sharp, cold Helvetica. Marcus didn't smile when he handed me the keys. He didn't offer a celebratory drink or a firm handshake of welcome. He just leaned over my desk, his breath smelling of expensive espresso and the metallic tang of a man who had spent the night shredding documents, and whispered that some opportunities are built on foundations of absolute, unwavering discretion. He told me the salary bump wasn't just for my expertise in logistics, but for my ability to develop a sudden, permanent case of amnesia regarding anything that happened before Monday morning. I sat in the leather chair, the scent of her perfume, something floral and expensive, still clinging to the vents, and I realized my new title was just a sanitized label for a human shield. The industry calls this a strategic advancement, but the way the interns look at me tells a different story. They don't see a mentor, they see a collaborator. I watched the Slack notifications pop up on my dual monitors, a steady stream of congrats that felt like sarcastic barbs, because none of them were followed by an invitation to lunch. The kitchen was a ghost town when I walked in to grab a water. The conversation died the second the sensor detected my badge. Sarah from accounting didn't even look up from her Greek yogurt, her knuckles white as she gripped her plastic spoon, the silence expanding until the hum of the refrigerator sounded like a jet engine. They know. They all know that I was the one they tapped to plug the leak, the reliable, ambitious girl who would trade her conscience for a corner office and a six-figure bonus that felt more like hush money than a merit increase. Marcus called me into his office an hour later, the blinds drawn tight against the mid-afternoon sun, turning the room into a cave of shadows and expensive scotch. He didn't ask about the quarterly projections or the shipping delays in the Midwest. He talked about loyalty. He talked about the family we've built here, and how sometimes family members make mistakes that need to be handled within the walls, not in the court of public opinion or a LinkedIn exposé. He shifted a manila folder toward me, the edges slightly frayed, and told me my first task was to audit the miscellaneous expenses from the previous VP's final month. His eyes were flat, two gray stones that didn't blink, weighing me against the cost of a lawsuit. He said my predecessor was talented but lacked the emotional regulation required for high-stakes leadership, implying her exit wasn't a choice but a necessary amputation for the health of the firm. I looked at the folder and saw the numbers. Six-figure wire transfers to shell companies, travel expenses to hotels I knew were used for discreet executive retreats, and a line item for a legal retainer that made my stomach do a slow, sickening roll. The realization hit me like a physical blow to the solar plexus. I wasn't just replacing her. I was being paid to bury her. The scandal wasn't just a heated argument or a bad HR report. It was a systematic erasure of a woman who had finally found the receipts. And here I was, the safe choice, the woman who had spent years playing the game, nodding at the right times, and never once making a scene. I went back to my new office and locked the door, the click of the deadbolt sounding like the closing of a cell. My hands were shaking as I opened my laptop, looking at the severance agreement they'd had her sign under duress. I could see the digital breadcrumbs she'd tried to leave behind. Files renamed with obscure codes, a hidden folder in the shared drive titled Insurance. She wasn't crazy, she was terrified. And now I'm the one holding the shovel. By 5 p.m., the office was a tomb. The cleaning crew moved through the cubicles like shadows, their vacuums a dull roar that blocked out the sound of my own heartbeat. I stared at the phone, wondering who I could even call. Not my husband, who was already bragging to our neighbors about the new Lexus we were going to buy. Not my mother, who thought I'd finally made it in a man's world, I was utterly alone in a glass tower, surrounded by the ghosts of a truth that was being systematically dismantled. I opened the insurance folder and found the photographs. They weren't just of Marcus, they were of the entire board. A gallery of men who thought their wealth bought them immunity from the most basic human decencies. There were logs of conversations that would melt the server if they ever went public. Details of incentives offered to female juniors in exchange for their silence, and the cold hard proof that my promotion was the final piece of the cover-up. I was the diversity hire that proved the culture wasn't toxic, the female face they could point to while they continued to rot the company from the inside out. The phone on my desk buzzed. A text from Marcus. Dinner at 7? Let's celebrate the new era. The casualness of it was the most terrifying part. He wasn't worried. He didn't think I'd flip, because he'd already bought my future. He knew about my mortgage, my kids' private school tuition, the way I'd clawed my way up from the bottom of the ladder. He knew that for someone like me, the cost of the truth was higher than the cost of the lie. I looked at the delete button on the folder, my finger hovering over the trackpad. If I clicked it, the ghost of my predecessor would be gone forever. I'd be the hero of the 32nd floor. I'd get the bonus, the respect of the board, and a career that would skyrocket until I hit the next glass ceiling. If I didn't, I'd be out on the street by Monday, labeled as difficult and not a culture fit. My reputation shredded before I could even get my personal items out of the building. I walked to the window and looked out at the city, the lights flickering on like 1,000 tiny witnesses. Down there, people were heading home to lives that didn't require them to sell their souls for a title. Up here, the air was thin and recycled, and the silence was getting louder. I thought about her face, the woman I'd seen being escorted out by security, her eyes red but her head held high. I wondered if she was watching the building right now, waiting to see if the woman they hired to replace her had a spine or just a price tag. The weight of the manila folder on my desk felt like it was pulling the entire room into a black hole. I realized then that my new title wasn't Vice President of Operations. It was Accomplice. The Slack notification sound chirped. A message from a junior associate I'd mentored for 3 years. Hey, is it true? Did she really just leave for personal reasons? We're all a bit confused down here. I stared at the blinking cursor, the white light of the screen blinding me. I could type the company line. I could tell her that sometimes people move on, and it's best not to gossip. I could protect the family. Or I could tell her the truth and watch the entire tower burn to the ground. My hand moved to the mouse, but it wasn't the delete button I was looking for. It was the forward button. But then I saw Marcus's car pull into the executive lot below, the sleek black sedan looking like a predator waiting in the tall grass. He looked up, and for a second I felt like he could see me through the tinted glass, seeing right through the charcoal suit and the $200,000 salary to the terrified girl who just wanted to belong. I didn't send the message. I didn't delete the folder. I just sat there in the dark, the only light coming from the insurance files that were now burning into my retinas. The elevator chimed down the hall. Someone was coming up, probably Marcus, coming to make sure his investment was secure. I stood up, smoothing my skirt, feeling the cold weight of the keys in my pocket. The point of no return wasn't when I accepted the job. It was right now, in the 5 seconds before that door opened. I reached for the folder, my heart hammering against my ribs like a trapped bird. And I realized I had to decide if I was the one who was going to stop the bleeding, or if I was just going to be the next one to bleed.